Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, and welcome to Dudes on Hockey Podcast. I'm Mike, that's Doug.
Dude, I was just downstairs watching the news.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really weird. You know, they've got the news on tonight. You know, it's a little bit late, so it's the evening news. And they had Dean Lombardi on.
Yes.
And he's down there, and he's standing in front of his house, and he said that Alexander Frolov had floated off in a balloon.
Really? He's the one in the balloon now?
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Wow.
I don't know.
Get the choppers. Let's follow that balloon.
I guess, you know, and the funny part is, though, unlike the dad with the child who wanted him back, Lombardi didn't want him back.
Yeah, he's like, just float away.
Could you just let him go? just let him float away.
He wants to be free.
Yeah. Put him somewhere. Alexander Frolov is floating above the suburbs of Los Angeles right now. I believe maybe he's touched down in Bakersfield.
Yeah, so he could play for their ECHL team. Actually, no, ECHL. The Bakersfield Falcons, is it?
That's very fitting now, isn't it?
Yes.
It's the Fresno Falcons, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Oh, you know, it's so hard to keep up with our minor league hockey, dude. And we've got so much to talk about with our road trip and everything.
Yeah.
But, dude, can we talk about something real quick?
Yeah.
We've hit the big time.
We have hit the big time, dude.
We got some pretty good press this week.
We did, thanks to John from Sharks Page. It was as much as you couldn't believe it. We are not the most amazing promoters ever.
What are you talking about?
We've got a
lot of irons in the fire here, but everybody needs a little help.
It's true. And John
helped a little scratch on the back from our friend John at Sharks Page.
Absolutely.
And we were featured in the Wave magazine, mm-hmm. Downtown San Jose magazine, as one of the main sources for Sharks information. It was Jamie Baker.
Yeah.
Sharks Page.
Yeah.
Puck Prospectus, who we have a lot of respect for.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then us.
Yeah. It's sort of like one of these things is not like the other.
Yeah, what the hell's Jamie Baker doing in there?
I know, that guy's a hack.
I was stoked about that. So pick up a Wave magazine, and hopefully maybe we got some new listeners due to that. So if we do, welcome to Dudes on Hockey.
That's right.
Got a road trip to talk about, dude.
And the best thing is, Waves magazine is free.
It is, just like this podcast.
I think you can get it like at Starbucks or something, right?
Yeah, I picked up 3 copies.
Oh, did you?
Of Starbucks?
Because I've been meaning to get one. I haven't seen
it. I have them. Awesome. I picked up one for me, one for my mom.
Of course.
Yeah.
Moms always want to see that stuff.
Yeah.
See your name in print.
That's right. And I've got a third one.
Doug Sartana. That's what it said.
Huh?
Doug Sartana, right?
Doug Sartana?
That was your name. A couple typos.
Oh, was there a typos?
No, I'm just kidding.
Dude.
I'm just messing with you.
Now you're... Thanks a lot.
Sorry, dude.
You know I have acid reflux. You're just making it worse.
Just like Dean Lombardi and Alex Frolov. Jeez. That can give you indigestion. But we got lots of questions this week, dude. We're up to episode 70, and a big part of Dudes on Hockey is we take questions from listeners.
We're almost at Ryan Vesci's number.
We're almost there. But I mean, you know, another 40, 50, 60 numbers, we'll be up at the rookies' numbers. Pretty soon they're going to need 3 digits. But we do have lots of questions, and people comment on the blog. We're going to talk about that, talk about the 3 games that happened this week all on the road. But first of all, this is a question that's occurred to me several times this week, and there's a stat that Joe Micheletti certainly mentioned in the New York Ranger game, and that's the Sharks have scored the opening goal of a game only once this season, and that was against the Ducks opening weekend. And every other game, they have not scored first. So Scott from San Jose says, I'm worried about the Sharks' apparent inability to score the first goal of the game. As he said, we've only scored first against the Ducks. We didn't even score the first shootout goal in the 1-0 loss to the Coyotes. How worried should I be about the Sharks' habit of playing from behind, and to what do you guys attribute this behavior? Dude, any ideas? Why can't we come out in the first period and go like gangbusters? What's up with that?
Well, I wish that this was like a new trend for us, but it really isn't. I feel like this has been the way the team... And, you know, I mean, there's been a lot of talk that, you know, the Rob Blake era of being captain hasn't really changed much of anything. I suppose yet, you know, as far as their attitude and their approach towards the game, you couldn't see that there's an apparent shift in how the team as a whole is maybe handling themselves, and that, you know, they're clearly the better team when they take on a team like the Islanders last Saturday. They're way superior to the Islanders, and in the end, they ended up, you know, really taking it to them after a terrible first period.
Yes, yes.
So why can't they come out there and just lay it on thick from the beginning?
I think they shouldn't have the two dozen Krispy Kremes before the game starts. I think that's sugar crash about 5 minutes in. That's just bad times, you know.
But when you do, when you're in New York, you gotta have those.
Yeah, or is it Dunkin' Donuts?
It's both.
Yeah, I like the strawberry Dunkin' Donuts. That's my favorite.
Yeah,
the strawberry.
That's good.
Because it's a really unnatural color. That's the other thing I like about that donut is it's not a color that occurs in nature.
So the Sharks are having too many donuts, dude. Come on, dude.
That's my theory.
No,
I'm telling you.
Do you think that they're bored? Do you think they're bored already?
No, I don't think
so.
Then
why can't they score the first?
I have no idea what it is. You know, maybe it's just lines have been changing a lot. Who knows? I mean, your guess is as good as mine. It's freaky. I'm not that worried about it because, frankly, they're winning games, right?
Does it matter? I mean, it's not who scores first, right? It's who scores the most. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for us not to be able to, I can see where the concern is coming from as far as, you know, in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. If you don't score first, that does put you at a severe disadvantage at times where if you're playing a hot goalie,
yeah,
you know, you don't score first, you could be really behind the eight ball pretty fast. So it's not a good trend for them to be involved in. But I mean, when you're 5-3-1 and first place in the Pacific as they are as of today, you know, it's still super early, but you know, I'm not too concerned about that trend.
I was so mad after the Islanders game. Come on, like, how bad can they be? If they start this slow against the Rangers, they're completely screwed. How wrong was I about that? They started easily that bad against the Rangers, gave up two goals, and then came roaring back and scored, what, six in a row? And then ended up 7-3 against the New York Rangers, who at the time were 7-1 with the best record in hockey. And the Sharks just completely overpowered them in the second and third period, chased Steven Valiquette, brought in the Vezina finalist Henrik Lundqvist to mop up and goal in the third period, and Henrik Lundqvist gave up two goals on 12 shots. So it's not that he came in and calmed the game down. The Sharks continued to score even when they brought in their you know, all-star quality netminder. So the Sharks clearly have the firepower to hang with anybody in this league. It's just a frustrating trend. They're going to break it sooner or later, right? I mean,
you got to think so. I think that maybe what might be something to point the finger at is that in the Islander game, we fell behind because we were on the kill. Mm-hmm. And in the Ranger game, yeah, we fell down 1-0, but then the second goal was on the kill also. The Sharks' kill so far this year is middle of the road.
Yes.
It's not good. It's 80%.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not good. I mean, we're in company right now we're in company with some pretty damn good teams, New Jersey, Carolina. But at least it's not as bad as Toronto's kill. 60%.
Well, nothing is as bad as Toronto right now.
60%. Yikes.
The Islanders actually won tonight, so there's that.
How about the Colorado Avalanche with a 30% power play?
Unbelievable. Right, well, but remember, there's regression towards the mean. Remember St. Louis at this point last year had a 40% power play?
Yeah. Dude, I'm sorry. What? Do you know who has the worst power play in the NHL as of today?
I have no idea.
The Nashville Predators. Oh, do you know what their conversion percentage
is? Like 6% or something?
Lower.
Lower than, yeah, oh my God.
4.2%, dude.
0.0.
They have one power play goal in 24 tries. That is a team. Now listen, I mean, we can complain about our Sharks as much as we want, but can you imagine being a Nashville Predators fan right now?
No, I can't.
What do you have to look forward to? Seriously.
Nothing.
I mean, they've got a few good pieces, but you know what? They're going to end up just having to get rid of them down the road anyways. They're in big, They're in big trouble. They've got nobody to score. They're going to have to trade one of their defensemen in order to get some forward help there, but I'm not sure that they've got a plan going on there.
Right.
Sad. Yeah. Nah, you know what? Who cares?
Who cares? We beat them in the playoffs every time. No,
I really don't care.
Okay, I want to go to a question that actually was raised by Tom on the blog, which is sharks.hockeyanalysis.com, and this actually dovetails nicely with a bet that you and I have had ongoing that Tom didn't know about at the time, and he says, I'd really like to hear what you guys think of Ryan Vesey. I realize it's way early, but he's sitting on two goals in two games and looking great with Joe and Heater. What do you think of the realistic chances of him staying here? And then he talked about the possibility of Pavelski maybe moving to the third line. Is that this email, or am I talking something up? Is that somebody else?
Well, I think that's all kind of the same topic. I don't have the email in front of me, but I said, I made a joke. Well, not a joke. I made a bet with you, actually.
Yeah, you
and I'm planning on collecting.
You did.
And I said that Ryan Vesey is going to score in the Rangers game, and you laughed openly at me.
I did.
And he scored.
And he did. Yes.
And the thing with Vesey that I think we've seen in the last two games is that he has a nose for the puck.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he seems to be in the right places at the right times. You can't say that either of his goals were like a thing of beauty. They were both kind of trashy,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't matter.
No.
I mean, he's small, but he's willing to get in front of the net and do the dirty work.
Right.
And he was able to kind of collect the trash both times and put it in. And so, you know, the thing with Vesey is once Pavelski gets back, he's really a top six forward, and that's it.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do with Vesey when Pavelski gets back, dude?
I think you send him down.
You send him down?
Yeah.
But if he's producing...
I know. But
how,
I mean,
how can you send him down?
What are you going to do? Put Pavelski on the fourth line? I mean...
No.
You got to put Pavelski there.
Who goes down?
I think you got to put Vesey down. That's the situation.
I'm not saying who's sending him down. I'm saying to you that if Vesey, by the end of this road trip, comes away with 4 points in five games, you're going to send him down?
No.
Well, who do you move down a line?
Ferriero.
Ferriero's not in the top six right now.
Well, you move down... I don't know.
You don't move down 1 point Ryan Clough?
I guess... I mean, that's...
Don't that, you... I mean, I thought line, the right? whole point of this new approach was that if you're producing, then you play. Mm-hmm. And if you're not... then you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, while I think we both agree that Ryan Clough is going to snap out of this, and there's just no way that Ryan Clough is going to, at the end of the year, have 9 points or something, and we're like, man, he sucks. He got paid, you know, $300,000 a point or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way.
$3 million a point.
$3 million a point. Holy Lord.
No, he's good.
I mean, there's no way that that's going to happen.
Yeah.
But right now, you know, could you see that? Why should Vesey be sent down? I mean, he's working his tail off, dude.
You're right. It's tough. I'm not, this is coloring my judgment. I am not a Ryan Vesey believer. I like him. I think he's a good player. But I've said it before on the podcast that to be that size and to be effective in the NHL, you have to be excellent at something. And Ryan Vesey is not excellent at anything. You look at a guy like Martin St-Louis, he has great speed and great hands around the net, and Vesey is not in the same class with St. Louis in either of those categories.
Absolutely.
So that's the thing. And Nickel he's a pain. You know, Nickel's that size roughly. He's a little bit bigger. But
Nickel's stronger than Vesey.
He's stronger, and he's a real pain in the butt, and he's real, you know, he's real pesky.
Play the kill.
And Vesey isn't that guy either. So, you know, I wonder about Vesey. Is he just the AHL star only? And that's what I think of Vesey as. And maybe he's going to prove me wrong. But right now, I still think of him like that, despite the fact that he got 2 points playing on, two guys. One guy scores 50 goals a year, and another guy scores 100 points.
Well, I mean, we saw Lucas Kaspar actually scored a goal when
exactly.
he played on the top line last
that's
year.
Saying.
But the thing is you ride the hot hand. And Vesey's the hot hand right now. And you know what? He may go completely stone cold in these next three games and have no points, and then you send him back down.
Right.
But, you know, geez, I mean, I don't care. If Thomas Greiss started scoring goals, I'd put him on the top line.
Yeah,
hell,
sure.
He's not playing anywhere else.
No, he's certainly not.
Might as well give him a shot.
We got a question about that a little later in the show. The second thing is, what happens when Pavs gets back? Do you put Pavs on the third line?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not is my answer.
I think you could chalk that up as to a major reason why Ryan Clough is struggling.
Yes.
I mean, that's who he has a lot of his chemistry with.
Yeah.
No.
I hope they find a way to put those two back together when Pavs comes back. But Pavs is the second line center. Marlowe plays great on the wing right now. He is blowing past people. And you have that kind of offensive freedom only when you play the wing. When you play center, a lot more of the time, you have to be more defensively responsible, and you don't have those kinds of capabilities. So I like to see Marlowe on the wing, and I want to see Pavs in the center there. And if Clough isn't playing well, then you put Vesey on that line, or you bring up somebody else. But Pavelski is too important of a player and too good of a player to put on the third line because there's a log jam ahead of him. That you find a way to put Pavs there. That's my opinion.
I don't see why Pavs is going to be punished for having an injury.
Right.
You know, that's he's right. going to take his normal spot. I think the top six will probably restore to what we expect them to be. But if Vesci's hot, you ride the hot hand.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that that should be the strategy that they have. If a player is producing, then you go with them. But, you know, I feel like that's what they're saying. I'm not totally sure that's what they're doing because they keep sending down Jamie McGinn.
Right.
Now, I mean, you know, McGinn hasn't been, you know, scoring, no. right? I mean, I'm trying to look at the stats here.
He's not awesome.
It looks like, you know, he's not, McGinn has no points. So, you know, yeah. as much as we're saying, you know, McGinn, you know, he's looked good out there. Well, he's got no points in five games.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe he's looked good at times, but you can look at a guy like Jed Ortmeier. He's got two goals. He's been a little bit of a pleasant surprise.
Absolutely,
you say?
Jed Ortmeier has been. Sure, sure. I mean, you get a guy, you want him to be an energy player, you want him to be physical, and he's shown a reasonable amount of hands, you know, a little bit of a scoring touch there. Got a nice goal from, you know, set up by Demers, and he's got a couple nice goals. So it's good to see that. Let's go to the next stuff because we got lots of other emails. You talked about Thomas Greiss a second ago, and Adam emails us about Thomas Greiss. He's got three different questions, but the first one is, do we have to still see what Greiss is capable of, or is he already the next Dmitry Patsold? And for those of you who aren't, you know, quite as well versed on the history of Sharks backup goaltenders as we are, Dmitry Patsold was a guy who we thought was going to be a great prospect, was the backup for Nabby for a short time, basically never played, and then was promptly released.
Well, when he did play, I mean, his goals against that year was like over five.
Yeah.
It was terrible.
But he didn't play that much.
I know, too, but let's hold the phone here. All right, comparing Greiss to Dmitry Patsold is a little extreme. I mean, Patsold really never had any AHL success. If you look at his AHL numbers, they're underwhelming. I mean, his mm-hmm. career AHL numbers, his goals against is 3.12.
Yeah, it's not good.
That's not good enough. If that's your AHL numbers, guys who play like that mm-hmm. and his save percentage is under, you know, 90%, it's like 8.96.
Oof. That's not good.
You don't get promoted.
No.
And so, you know, I think that was more of an example of the Sharks trying to maybe cut a corner.
Yeah.
You know, than, you know, have a good backup. Whereas Greiss literally carried Worcester to the playoffs last year and won a playoff series.
Yes.
So this guy's nuts.
As the 8th seed, right?
Yeah. I don't know if they were the 8 they or were, the
they
7.
They were definitely the lower seed in that series, and they won.
And they won. And he played well in the second round, too. I mean, in his numbers were... I think he had his goals against was like 2.42 or something. I mean, he had a really good year last year. So this guy's not a chump statistically, but dude, why hasn't he seen any action except for his thrilling, you know, understudy performance when he came in and looked like a tool, you know, in that one goal? Is that why he's not playing?
No, I think it's because of what you said just a second ago about Ryan Vesey, and that's you play the hot hand. Nabby has been playing great lately. The last 2 weeks, or last week and a half anyway, Nabby has played very, very well. And, you know, maybe the third goal in the Ranger game wasn't the best, but what are you going to do? But Nabby, to a large extent, has been great. But still, we've talked about this certainly quite a bit in previous shows, and we will continue to talk about it. This team has a big question mark at the goaltending position next year, and the Sharks need to answer that question somehow. And if they don't intend to re-sign Nabby, as we have both guessed they won't do, then that means they need to have an answer. And Greiss needs to, they need to get enough play out of Greiss in order to answer that question. They need to play Greiss. He needs to play on this road trip, in my opinion. He needs to play on Saturday and play Nabby on Sunday against Philly. So, yeah, I don't like what they're doing there. They need to give him some more starts. I mean, look at the Rangers. They played Steven Valiquette against us. Of course, we chased him. But, you know, the Sharks are a good team, and they still, and Lundqvist had been playing well, and the coaches said, we need to give him some rest. Why do the coaches not have that mentality with Nabby right now?
I mean, I can only read into it that they have no confidence in him. You know, I'm looking here, it says, Evgeny Nabokov will start Thursday against the Lightning, according to the Mercury News.
Jeez.
So, I mean, that's a game where you would look at that and go, Tampa Bay is not very good. That's a low-pressure situation for Greiss to be put in there. I certainly would pick playing him against Tampa Bay over Atlanta.
Yeah.
Atlanta's playing well right now. So that might not be, you know, the ideal situation, but that's a back-to-back.
Mm-hmm.
dude, you've got to expect that we're going to see Grice in Atlanta, right? Right?
We better.
We have to.
We, yeah.
It's going to happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm going to say it's going to happen.
Here's sort of a corollary. Adam's second question is, he gives some stats about how many games Stanley Cup winning goaltenders have played in the last few years. 2009, Fleury played 62 games, Osgood only 46. 2008, it was Osgood 43 and Fleury 35. 2007, Jaguar only played 56 and Emery played 58. So the trend is that the Stanley Cup goaltenders, the goaltenders in the Stanley Cup finals, are playing usually no more than 65 games, 60 to 65 games, and most of the time under 60. And at this rate, Nabby's going to be playing high 60s, low 70s again this year. Isn't this another reason why Grice needs to get more starts?
I guess. I mean, according to those stats, I mean, that's a pretty short... I mean, that's the last 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that seems to show that that's important. I can't imagine that that's the way it's been for the last 10 to 15 years.
Right.
I mean, guys used to play way more games than that.
Yeah, Glenn Hall played 500 games straight or something.
So, you know, I don't know. I just... I don't want to blame it on anything.
Yeah,
like I think, you know, listen, you know, should we have a backup that we believe in? Yes, because, you know, the odds are that Nabokov's going to get hurt. He always gets hurt every year. He's going to be out for a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
His back, his groin, a balloon. You're never sure what's going to happen.
Float away,
you know,
again.
I mean, hey, maybe they're floating away to Russia. You don't know what's going to happen, dude.
That's right.
So, you know, when that happens, who are they going to turn to? So then this is why I ask you this. Would the Sharks be better off signing a veteran like Manny Legacy just to sit? I mean, if you're going to have someone opening and closing the door, wouldn't you rather have it be someone like Manny Legacy and let Grice go play in Worcester?
Well, doesn't it seem like Grice is now not good enough to... they want to play Stalock and they want to play Sexsmith in Worcester, right? If you sign Manny Legacy, then what do you do with Grice?
I don't know.
Put him in the ECHL?
No.
I mean, that doesn't make sense. I think this is what they've chosen, is they're paying a guy, you know, $600,000, almost the league minimum, to open and close the door. That's what they would do if they wanted Manny Legacy, right? They'd pay him $600,000 to open and close the door.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
What's the difference? The name on the back of the jersey.
So it's Grice or bust, and, you know, if something happens to Nabby, I think we've both speculated all along, it's not going to be Grice who's going to come in and play. It's going to be Alex Stalock.
Yeah.
So... You know, and Stalock's been playing pretty darn well.
That's right.
Very early in Worcester, but, you know, he's been looking good. So we'll see. It's a little frustrating, but I think we'll get our first look at Grice on Sunday in Atlanta.
I hope so. Actually, no, Sunday is... No, Saturday is Atlanta. Sunday is Philly.
I'm sorry. I've been drinking.
I think... What else is new? All right. The third question is great because Adam has a third question, which goes into a segment we haven't done in quite a while, actually.
Crazy trade.
All right, crazy trade segment. Adam, thank you for providing us some fodder for this.
So I've missed this.
I have too. I'm glad we're bringing it back. He said, with Claude turning into the new whipping boy with an admittedly small sample, is a pure fantasy to consider Claude for the new balloon boy Alexander Frolov as the principals of a deal? He says, LA looks like they're building a distinctly North American team, Kopitar accepted. Maybe they don't want a flashy Russian that doesn't play much defense. So what do you think? Frolov for Klo, dude? You like that? And we also, in honor of this great proposal by Adam, we came up with our own crazy Klo trades. So first of all, what do you think of Frolov? And then what do you got for a crazy trade?
What do I think of Frolov? Well, I can't have a super, you know, strong admiration for a guy who has completely fallen out of favor, it looks like, again.
Yes.
And, you know, it seems, I mean, I don't know. I don't know enough about the player, but it seems like he doesn't play defense. He seems to check out.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, don't we already have a guy with that knock? I mean, do we really need
another one?
I mean,
Everybody needs a guy like that, right?
But you don't need two. And I'm not taking a shot at Danny Heatley here.
No.
But I'm saying, you know, why would you trade a guy like Klo for, you know, who has been a proven decent commodity in your system, you know, for Frolov, what's he going to add to the table here? You're losing a ton of toughness.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Klo is, you know, second on the team in penalty minutes. I wouldn't make that deal. I think it makes no sense for the Sharks, but I would trade Ryan Garner for the Kostitsyns.
Would you?
Yeah, I would.
Because you know, Andre has, he's already flown to Russia. He's AWOL from Hamilton.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Will he take Garner with him?
Yeah.
Good. Expect to see that on his blog tomorrow.
I will. Anyway, in terms of Frolov, even though I do read Battle of California religiously, and Rudy Kelly, who is the King's blogger, loves Alex Frolov for reasons I don't quite understand, I'm not a big fan of this deal either. This guy is a project at this point. And do you really want to put him on a team that's supposed to win the cup and has problems performing consistently?
It seems like Mahalik. I mean, isn't it Mahalik? But Mahalik at least had good work ethic.
Did he?
Well, I mean, dude, you can't say Mahalik didn't try.
That's true. Okay. Yeah,
I mean, I never heard that Mahalik was not trying or that people were like...
He was just streaky.
Yeah, he was streaky, but it wasn't like he was putting in an effort.
That's true.
It sounds like this guy doesn't show up.
Well, they healthy scratched him. So, that's not a good sign. Okay, so do you have who's your crazy trade?
Okay, so we're saying we're going to ship Clough out?
Yeah, we're shipping Clough. Who's our crazy
trade? I'm going on the record saying I'm not ready to trade Ryan Clough, period.
I'm not either, but I like crazy trade.
All right. I've got two. Is that cheating?
Kinda.
Okay, I'll go with this one.
I have an alternate too. So
I'll go with the first one.
Okay.
Ryan Clough, Kent Huskins, dude.
Okay.
And Derek Jocelyn.
Wow. Okay.
To Toronto for Francois Beauchemin.
God damn you! This is my trade.
Oh, and Matt Stajan.
This is my trade. I have this written down right here.
Get out of here!
I said Beauchemin right here. Turn down. Actually, that means
it's a good trade, dude.
That's right. I'll give you my other one.
Okay. Well, let's talk about this one first.
Okay. Let's talk about this one
first. Why does this make sense? Since we both thought of it, and I swear we never talked about it.
We did not talk about it before the show.
It's not like Beauchemin's lighting Toronto on fire right now.
No, I thought of Beauchemin, though. I did.
He's exactly the type of player that we need on the blue line to stabilize it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think everybody would agree, listeners, that Jason Demers is for real.
Yes.
And he's here to stay. And he's been great on the power play. So we don't need to fill that void. But we do need a partner for Dan Boyle who's going to be able to be maybe a little bit more effective in 20-plus minutes than Murray. God love him. He's doing a good job. I'd rather see Murray playing, 15 minutes than 20.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you get Stajan, whose contract is expiring.
Yeah.
Toronto gets Jocelyn to help them on the power play. They need, good.
Yes.
Boy.
Yeah. Good Lord.
They are bad.
Yes.
On the power play, they get Huskins, who can play those extra minutes. And they get Ryan Clough. I mean, he would help them a lot
because
they are offensively challenged.
Reunited with Ron Wilson. I know. I have Beauchemin, and I also have a slash. My first choice actually is Ian White, who might be their best defenseman at the moment. I said Ian White in a second. Ian White, he's a 25-year-old defenseman, pretty decent points, had 20-some-odd points the last couple of years, 9 or 10 goals, 10 to 15 assists. He's not
versatile. He's sort of like the modern-day Matthew Dandenault.
He's not bad. He's really not bad at all. And, but Ian White is not a premier player, but he adds stability
to the
blue line.
He's a depth guy, for sure.
Yeah.
And he's inexpensive.
That's right. And so I said Ian White in a second. And then I have Beauchemin. So, that's interesting that we both came up with Toronto. Let's take it out on the short kid, right? Let's punch him and take his lunch money.
Well, they need help. I don't think they're going to push the panic button, but, they have a ton of assets on the blue line and they might be looking to make a move and it's not going to be Komisarek.
No, it's not going to be Komisarek.
Beauchemin might be the one that goes, geez, maybe this wasn't a great idea. Maybe we need to look somewhere else. Okay, what's your other one, dude? What's your alternate?
Ian White slash Beauchemin was my alternate.
Here's my second Clough trade.
Okay.
Right? Clough and Jocelyn, again.
Yes.
To Columbus.
Yes.
For Nikita Filatov, who's in their doghouse.
Yes.
Plus, we have to take back the salary of Jason Chimera.
Okay, so we take Jason Chimera. So some of you may remember that Christian Ehrhoff was rumored in a deal for Jason Chimera during the summertime.
I can tell you why I don't like it. Because we lose a lot of toughness again.
Yes.
And, Filatov is, he's very skilled, but he could be amount to no more than Frolov.
He could be Frolov. That's right.
So, true. Well, here's something to toss out there.
And he looks a little bit like Amanda Bynes, Frolov does. Filatov does. Just one of those things. Looks a little bit like
in the movie where she dresses up like a dude, or a movie when she's just like herself.
When she dresses up like the dude, that's another Rudy Kelly reference for those Battle of California
readers.
Looks
like Filatov or Frolov.
Yeah, Filatov.
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 Filatov looks like a woman.
Sometimes. It's funny.
Sometimes, really.
Yeah, actually, if you search for that on Balacalia.com, you can find like the two pictures side by side.
So you're asking our listeners to type into Google, Filatov looks like a woman?
Yes, I am.
Okay. All right.
Well, Lord knows I've typed in worse.
How about Filatov for Frolov, straight up? No, I'm talking about for them, dude.
Yeah, for them. Bring it, sure. One guy that you don't like for another guy that they don't like. You know, go to town. Vaya con Dios.
If I was LA, I'd do that immediately.
Yeah, I would do it too.
Absolutely.
At least, you know, the jury's still out on Filatov.
Chloe should not be in the hot seat yet.
Right. But he shouldn't be on the block.
No.
He should be on the hot seat because he's not playing well, but he shouldn't be on the block.
No, but you know, Doug Wilson's continuing to look for ways to make this team better. And I think that still, you know, probably not many people are totally 100% safe.
No, no.
Even now.
Oh, so, no, certainly not. All right. We got another email. Last email from Ivan Makarov here.
Yes, Ivan. Thank you for coming back.
Thanks for coming back, man. He says he has one question for us. It's hard to argue with the results we've seen in the last two games of moving Heatley to power play unit two. In two games is not a very good sample. He's concerned with McClellan's logic of using Heatley on unit number two. He claims he's the third most dangerous man on the power play after Ovechkin and Kovalchuk. And the fact that he's on the second power play unit means he gets to spend generally less time on the power play. And he means to come out and distribute the puck to such players as Klo, Vesey, and Manny Malhotra. So, and on the Islanders game, Heatley spent less than a minute on the power play, while Marleau, Sorton, and Seto all spent close to 3 minutes. So here's the thing. Are you concerned, as Ivan is, about Danny Heatley being on the second power play unit and not playing up top with Joe?
Wow. Well, first of all, I think Evgeny Malkin might take exception to not being the third most dangerous person on the power play. Just tossing that out there.
Just saying it.
I am not concerned about it because I don't think this is something that's going to happen for the rest of the year. I think that Coach McClellan is trying to create a balanced power play right now, and without Pavelski, you know, he's searching for, you know, a way to make a balanced power play. I know Ivan kind of tossed out Malhotra as being, I didn't see that in the statistics as far as him getting significant power play time. I know Veshi did, but I don't know what the problem is. I mean, one group scored a power play goal one game, the other one, I mean, but didn't both score power play goals against the Rangers?
Yeah, Heatley had a goal. Healy had a power play
with those two line mates. So what's the problem?
It's just, you know, the it's an interesting conundrum, right? If that top line continues to click, you know, Seto and Joe and Marleau with Boyle and Demers at the point, you know, Healy's left out. And is it really a wise use of personnel to give a $7 million 50 goal score guy 2 minutes less than everybody else in the power play?
But won't that time kind of balance out as when Pavelski comes back and Klo snaps out of it? I mean, doesn't that make your second unit even better?
It makes your second unit better, but the second unit's always going to get less time. Is that really a wise use of these guys? That's the question.
Dude, if we win, I don't care.
That's right. That's
I think that's the point. Now, this is part of the thing that pissed Heatley off in Ottawa. But I don't think that this is going to be something that's going to be a full year thing. I mean, McClellan's been all over the place. I mean, you know, we've got Veshi, we've had Ferriero, we've had Scott Nickel for, you know, a fart and a whisper on the top line, you know. We've had everybody have their shot at playing up there, and I don't think this is going to be a permanent thing. I think we'll see Heatley back with Joe and Seto. But Seto's been up and down off the top line, too.
I mean, I like Heatley a lot, and I'm definitely a Heatley supporter, and I thought a lot of that stuff about him in Ottawa was overblown. But if the Sharks' power play is clicking along at 28%, then I don't care who's on what line, as long as they're scoring at 28%.
I'd like to think they don't care either. Although, you know, the Heatley-Seto-Joe power play, what I've seen of it, was pretty damn impressive.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So why you'd want to break it up, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I can see, you know, but on the other hand, you know, the results are still coming in. They're still scoring, even with it broken up. I think if they go cold for a couple games, we can start to raise our hands and say, excuse me, why? But if they keep scoring, let's keep on trucking.
All right, dude, we're running out of time. What about some predictions for the next week of games?
Gosh, what did I say? I said I thought we were going to be 1-2, and we're actually 2-1.
Mm-hmm.
So
you thought we'd lose to the Rangers, but we won that
game. I think we're going to go 2-1 at the end of this road trip. I think we win tomorrow in Tampa. I think we're going to get an overtime win in Atlanta. I think we're going to have our hands full with that. And I just have like a weird feeling that we're going to get completely murdered in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
I think that's a bad matchup for us.
We certainly come out being, we both put money on Philly to win the cup this year. So that's going to be, yeah, that might, you know, cloud my logic a little bit, but yeah, I'm going to go with the same thing. What did I say last week? I said 5 points out of six. I'll go 4 points out of six. I'll go with you, but I think we're going to beat Philly and maybe we might lose to Atlanta actually on Saturday because wow. Grice could get the start and get the loss.
So you think we're going to beat Philly?
I think we're going to beat Philly, sure.
Wow.
We beat them twice last year.
I know. I think they're a different team this year, though. I think that that's just... It's going to be a great look to see how do we match up against a team that is... I mean, because Philly basically has taken on the identity of the Ducks when they used to give us fits.
Mm-hmm.
So... You know, are we going to crumble like we do against the old style Ducks, or are they going to be able to just play through it?
Well, they lost to the Ducks just now, and they lost to Florida. So, and then they're playing, Philly is playing Boston, then Florida, then us this week. So,
sure. It's a matter of the style, though.
Yeah.
I mean, the Sharks just traditionally against a team that plays that sort of style, they don't excel.
Yeah.
You know, so. We'll see how it goes, dude. I'm hoping for the best.
All right, shootout. Some news around the league. Speaking of the Pittsburgh Penguins, they lost Sergei Gonchar. He's going to be out 6 weeks. Oops.
Oops.
How bad is that going to hurt him?
Anyone have Rob Scuderi's number? I don't think it's going to hurt him that much. I think they're going to they were able to move past it last year, and I wouldn't be surprised if they were kind of trolling for another, you know, Philippe Boucher type, mm-hmm. you know, to come in and fill in the gaps. But they'll overcome it. The team that I would think needs to be concerned is the Boston Bruins.
Yeah, they lost Mark Savard. That was my next news item.
Lucic,
yeah,
Savard. They traded Chuck Kobusu, and mm-hmm. and the only player that they added was Derek Paille. Daniel Paille.
From the Sabres.
You know, I'm not sure... if he's going to be able to pick up the slack really of anybody except for maybe Kobusu, but
even that's kind of a stretch.
Boy, Boston, they could be in for a long 6 weeks here.
They could be. They're only .500 right now. Final news, Michael Nylander sent down to the AHL.
Yeah, conditioning assignment, dude. Don't get too excited.
I was hoping the Shark could get him off waivers. Damn.
Yeah, you want to absorb all $4.5 million.
I'm gonna pay him $5 million to suck.
Nobody's gonna take that.
Yeah.
They are downright full on screwed unless they're willing to take Cristobal Huye back from the Chicago Blackhawks.
That's never gonna happen.
Ouch.
All right, that does it for this week's Dudes on Hockey. Thank you so much for listening. Become a fan of ours on Facebook, and we'll be back again next Wednesday. Same time, same place.
Balloon Knot.
Think the show sucks? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.